And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Mike Gregg. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup. In this episode, we're going to be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Reading, along with discussing several other topics as well. We have much to get through in this episode, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my Cottage Talk co-host back to the show, who's back in England, Mr. Mike Gregg. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Yeah, doing really well. Still suffering a little bit from jet lag, so I was wide awake at 1 o'clock last night, English time. But no, we had a great time, and it was, of course, very nice to be guests in your house for Thanksgiving. So me and my fiance had a great time, and we will certainly be looking at going back to America at some stage in the future.
Well, that would be great, and I hope that you come back our way, Mike. We really enjoyed having you. It was wonderful to have you spend Thanksgiving with us. We had a great time meeting yourself and Martina. It was just a fun Thanksgiving, and I'm just glad that you were able to share that with me and my family. Okay, my friend, let's now get into the show. And we actually have some Fulham news, and I mentioned to you before we started recording the episode that Savica had his press conference. I'm going to be reading other quotes from him, but we'll just start here because I was not aware of this, but Savica let everyone know that Dennis Odoi is suspended for this upcoming match against Reading. Mike, what are your thoughts about this suspension? Fulham obviously have Ryan Fredericks, but they don't have as much backup now and not much choice here. It sounds like Ryan Fredericks will be your right back against Reading.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it was a surprise looking back that Fredericks had actually, you know, been dropped last week. You know, he'd been doing fairly well up until recently. But, yeah, he's just going to slot right in. And, you know, at home, maybe Fredericks, that's his best role. We should be taking the game to people. So, yeah, not surprised. I mean, looking back on the Brighton game, which... you know, obviously, I had to watch on replay due to being in America. But, you know, we did have six bookings and Parker was suspended for last week. So, you know, we have to accept that these kind of suspensions are going to come along. And that's why we have a big squad. And but, you know, Odoi for Fredericks, Fredericks for Odoi, you know, is there much to choose? They choose between them. So I don't think it's that much of an issue, really, at the moment.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's just say something happens to Ryan Fredericks during the match. What does Slavisa Jokanović do? Now, we know Tomas Kalas can fill in there, but again, that would be taking away from your center back position. So what do you think he's going to do for backup here in case, you know, in case Ryan Fredericks needs to come out?
Well, I think it would be definitely that. It would be Kalas to right back. And then at the moment, the center back on the bench is Tim Ream. And, you know, it's for the last half dozen games, it's been pretty much three defenders on the bench, Sessegnon and Ream, and then whoever the other spare one is. So, yeah, I mean, it would be Kalas. That would make sense. The only other player we've seen play at right back this year was Tunnicliffe, but, you know, he did that for one game, and he's nowhere near the 18, so that's unlikely to see him on the bench. But, no, I think it would just be simply Kalas to move over. And Ream and Sigurdsson move over as well. I don't think he would play Sessegnon or Malone at right back, you know, for a short period of time. I think he'd go with the players with their natural foot.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, we also have some news coming from Reading, and I'm just going to share this with you. Reading will be without center back Liam Moore, who was suspended for the match against Fulham, according to an article I read in Get Reading. How significant a loss could this be, losing a starting center back? We had this situation with Tomas Kalas. And what's interesting, Mike, and I'll just share this with you. I listened to a very good podcast, the Tile Hurst End. I would recommend listening to this. You know, again, very interesting podcast. And they were previewing the match, as you can imagine. And one of the co-hosts said that this was a massive loss. So I'm curious your thoughts on this. Is this something that Fulham can take advantage of now that they don't have this center back? I've also read some things that maybe this might force change of formation. I believe recently they were even playing three at the back, you know, 5-3-2, 3-5-2, whichever way you want to look at it. So they might have to switch formation. So how significant a loss could this be for Reading?
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, if you look at some of the sites that do stats and marking, that type of thing, after the goalkeeper, he's their, technically their best player with regards match scores. You could argue that McCleary is, with his goals, is their top man. But no, Liam Moore will be a miss for them, and so we have to capitalise on that. It's going to be a hard game. They've won five league games on the trot, so they're very hot team on form. But
they are.
I'll take anything at the moment that might give us an edge. And Liam missing it is more of a blow to them than I would say Adari being suspended. That's for sure.
Oh, I totally agree with that. It's funny because listening to this podcast, I could just tell that this was a loss for them. Again, one of the co-hosts had massive loss, and then I was reading some other things, and I could just tell that this is significant for them. So we'll see how they adapt without Liam Moore for this match. All right, Mike, definitely want to talk to you about a couple of other topics. I was actually reading an article today, and I want to get your thoughts on this. We've talked about this before, the situation with Chris Martin, and I saw this article by Tom Moore, and it's about Chris Martin, and it says, Fulham need to sign Derby striker, insists Slavisa Jokanović. And there's a quote in there, and I'll read the quote from you, get your thoughts. Quote, it's not in my hands. My opinion is we need to sign a permanent deal with him. This is my opinion. It's a decision that is in the hands of the club. And that is a quote from this article from Tom Moore, a quote from Slavisa Jokanović. So, Mike, I agree with Slavisa here, and I'm sure you agree with him as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is the club's decision in the end, because, no manager gets involved in actually signing players anymore. So, again, you could read this a couple of ways. One is, he hasn't got control over the decision. And the other one is, he wants him, as well. And, there is a deal there to be done. It's been agreed. For me, it's a no-brainer. Over the last couple of seasons, he's what, the second, third best striker, with goals scored in the league. So he's that championship type striker we need to have if we're to go up either this year or next year. He should be in our squad. So I'm pretty sure the club will do a deal. And it's going to be down to Mike Rigg, I suppose, and the bean count is there to say, yes, this is a. We'll go ahead with the whatever agreed figure it was, 7 or 9 million, depending on what paper you read. But
yeah.
It's good that Jokanović is saying, I want him to sign. Because again, lots of people raise questions about, did he want him? Was he his choice? All this kind of stuff. But, clearly he wants him for his team. He sees him integral to how we are playing. And, It will be good for the club to be seen to be backing the manager at this moment in time by getting Martin to sign up fully.
Yeah, listen, Mike, I'm right there with you. And I mentioned in a prior show, I got a message from a source telling me that this person's hearing that Fulham are going to pick up the option and actually buy Chris Martin. But we'll have to wait and see. Again, this is just a source; it's speculation. And we'll see if it comes through. And I hope that they do back him. I'm talking about Fulham and sign Chris Martin. I think he's someone that should be with Fulham long term. That's just my opinion. We'll talk about how long term, but I'm talking about beyond this season. So I do hope that they do move forward on that. And we'll have to wait and see on that. All right, Mike. Let's also talk about another striker. I actually watched the Premier League 2 match for Fulham. Very interesting match against West Ham. Great stream. I want to thank Fulham Football Club for the stream of this match. It was crystal clear. It was a great stream. So thank you for allowing us Fulham supporters to watch. And I watched it. I was highly entertained in watching this. One thing I want to mention, one thing that did stand out, obviously Fulham got the victory and someone got two more goals, Mike. And I want to go to you, and I have a follow-up question to go along with this from one of our listeners. And again, here's a topic. Premier League 2 striker Stephen Humphreys has scored 5 goals in the last 2 games and has had a really good start to the season. I forget the amount of goals he's scored total, but it's up there. If you're Slavisa now, do you consider giving him a chance with the first team? Now, I know you mentioned you would wait a little bit on this potentially next season, but I believe he's also out of contract. So I'm curious your thoughts on this situation here.
Yeah, well, I'm curious about his situation as well, to be honest. I mean, yes, his contract runs out in the summer. I would have hoped we would have agreed some kind of deal by now. He did well pre-season, and then as soon as the season kicked off, he was sent back down to the 23s, was sub for a number of games. I was given some information as to why he was a sub, and it was not to do with fitness or anything like that. But he's got himself in the team again, and he's scoring almost every game. And, you know, I didn't watch the stream, but I spoke to a couple of other people who did. And, you know, Woodrow played, apparently, but was pretty anonymous from what they said. I mean, I don't know if you can back that up as well, Russ. But
he was. You know, I can back that up.
Yeah. So you can say he's doing his job. He's in the reserves or the 23s, whatever you want to call them. And he's scoring goals. And as a striker at that age, you can't ask for more. And I think if we're looking at, you know, you're looking at Smith and Woodrow as being the second, then third choice at the moment. But he's on a hot streak. And you've got to think, you know, there must be a way of somehow getting him in at least on the bench.
Right.
And giving him some game time. I mean, we do have Derby game coming up soon. I don't think Martin's going to be able to play. I haven't checked the rules on that, but I'm pretty sure because it's a loan at the moment, he won't be able to play. So there will be a space in the 18 there for someone to firstly step into the first team and then go on the bench. So the question is really, I suppose it's a choice at the moment between Humphreys and Woodrow. And, you know, if Jokanović rates him at all, then, you know, you would hope it would be that game that we see him. But he should be there or thereabouts in the matchday squad now as a striker. You know, we're not scoring a huge amount of goals. We are relying fully on Martin. And I see him very similar to Martin in ways. He's got the same kind of build. He's not, you know, he's not the lanky striker like Smith is. He's quite strong. But he's a goal scorer as well. He can be greedy, but he can also be involved in the build-ups the way Martin is. So he's done a lot better than I thought he would do. You know, he's improved a lot quicker. So, yeah, the time is coming where if we're going to want him to stay as well, we have to sort of give him his head a little bit and get him in the squad, just as we've done with, you know, Sessegnon and other youngsters in the past. So, yeah, I'd hope to see him sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Mike. And the best word I could use watching him, again, I'm just watching this one match, decisive. He's very decisive when he gets his opportunities, very decisive. And I think that's a good quality to have, obviously, as a striker. And I agree with you. I would like to see him get in the 18. Please, you know, again, show a little, you know, that you believe in this guy. And and give him a shot, especially, like you said, very good point about the upcoming Derby County match. Maybe that's the opportunity to at least get him on the bench, you know, make him feel that he's part of Fulham. So maybe he'll want to stay. And that's going to lead me to one of the questions with Ask a Co-host. We have three of them. This is from Dean Rozier, and it goes along with what we're talking about, Mike. And this is for you. Is Mike aware of any developments on youth contracts being renewed, which are expiring in the summer, mainly Humphreys?
In short, no, I don't at the moment. I'm surprised at how late we're leaving the Humphreys one, which makes me think, you know, there's either some negotiating going on or maybe Humphreys isn't sure about it. But I think, you know, because we've given so many youngsters their debuts fairly early on, you know, 16 with Sessegnon, but
that's right.
You know, 17, 18 year olds have been breaking into the team, and he's not really had a sniff of it yet. Maybe he feels he's, you know, he should be there or thereabouts, and maybe he's stalling. I don't know, but we have a very big squad, and you know, we have other players like Sheckerfield who's out on loan, you know, at a lower level. But at least he's getting games. But he's a player who, you know, his contract's up as well. So, you know, I think like the summer just gone where players like Jordan Evans were let go, I think next summer we're going to see some of the older youngsters, if that makes sense, being released, because we have a good batch coming through, as we've already seen with, there's Fosse as well, who's not made his debut or got anywhere near the first team, but he's a very young player and he's a right back. And then you've got Adrian, who made some appearances this season, Del Toro, these kind of guys, they're going to be a year older next year, and some of those ones who haven't quite made it are going to have to make way. So I think Humphreys, yeah, I mean, I really want him to get a contract. We should be tying him down for,
Absolutely.
3 years or whatever, because he has something about him. He's very, from my understanding, he's very single-minded. He wants to improve. He wants to be the best he can. Maybe that might come across as a bit cocky to some people. I don't know, but he's certainly in the striker-wise. He's a key man that we need to tie down. There's lots of others, but I think at the moment he is the one we need to get to sign on that dotted line. I'm confident the other guys who are important, who are coming through, will be signed on longer contracts, but we will see a couple go as well, and which will be disappointing, because a couple of those were in the old youth team final, and they have not progressed enough. So that's disappointing, but that's what happens at youth football. But
Yeah.
we have, like I say, a very, very big squad, and there may be some movement in January on some of the players, both at that level and at senior level, moving on.
It's a good point there, Mike. And this is an interesting situation. I happen to see some speculation about Humphrey's potentially Premier League team scouting him. So we'll see. I don't know what's going on there. I just hope Fulham are doing their best to try to sign this kid. He's scoring a good amount of goals. Like I said, I've watched him. What do I know? But I see someone that looks like he has a knack for scoring goals, and I think I'd rather see him stay with Fulham. So we'll see what ends up doing. And then, like you said, there are other players as well. So they've got some work cut out for them with some of these youth players that they have to look at sooner than later. So that's why I'm glad that we could bring that up. All right, Mike, like I said, we have two more questions. Let's go with my friend, Mr. High Noon Gary Cooper. Here's his question for you. People are saying if we get a striker in January, basically all of our problems will be sorted. Does Mike think that's the case? And did he see the tale of two halves scenario raise its ugly head again against Brighton? I know Brighton stepped it up a bit in the second half, but we're good enough. Should we be able to contain that some bit? So, Mike, your thoughts on Gary's question here.
No, I don't think just buying one striker is going to make any difference, because the way we're playing is we are only playing with one striker. So it's about depth for me. You have Martin, and then you have Matt Smith, Woodrow, Humphreys in that kind of order. And unfortunately, at the moment, I don't think Smith, Woodrow are good enough if Martin gets injured for even 2 games, let alone missing 1 game because he's on loan. So it will help getting a striker, that's for sure, and maybe a different type of striker as well, maybe a bit pacier. And then, of course, you might have the option of playing with two up top. But I think we've got the system he wants, and it's fitting the players in. But so that will help. But there's obviously something else missing. I can't pinpoint what it is. But you should always be looking to improve the side. So whether the issue is at the back somewhere, whether it's in midfield or out wide, there's something just not giving us. We spoke about it a couple of months or 6 weeks ago, Russ. So I was talking about that 10%. Where's that 10% that we can just improve? At the moment we're off the playoff pace. We get a couple of wins, then we drop back. So there's something missing. So we might see tomorrow. What's the difference with Reading? Reading have won 5 on the trot.
That's right.
Which is the kind of thing we need to do to give us some points in the bag and get into that top six. And then there's us who have a really good half, like we did against Brighton. And then second half, Brighton step it up. They're at home. They're second in the table. And they've only lost twice all season. So, you know, you have to get to that level. But, I mean, first off, we should have blown them away and should have been well in the lead. So, Martin is a very good striker, but if there's a better one out there that we can get, then, of course, you look to bring him in as well. But we definitely need, for me, we need the two strikers. And I just think somewhere, one of the wide positions, you know, at the moment we're playing this 4-1-4-1 or, you know, whatever way you want to do it. But
right. The
players playing in the Aiti and Aluko roles. Maybe, you know, we've got Cabano as well who can play in those Pearson. Hozabad we're not even seeing at the moment. There's Christensen. But maybe we need that one more quality, creative player who's a step up from these guys. And I think that's probably the... For me, that's probably one of the main issues why we're not finishing teams off. The qualities just needs to be that little bit better. So another wide player I would look and hope would make the difference.
You know, while you were saying that really makes sense, Mike. It's funny. You have said that it's this 10%. And what's interesting, as we go into our preview in just a little bit about Reading, you know, like you said, five in a row. What are they doing so right? And when you look at the table and I break that down for you and break down some of the stats, you're going to say, what is the difference here? So maybe it is this 10%, this being able to finish off an opponent, you know, when you have that opportunity in the first half to get that extra goal. And maybe it is someone that has a little bit more out wide, like you said. Maybe that is it, because I'm trying to figure out, what is it? What is it? I know that they need a striker, but what else is it? It's got to be something else. It can't just be that. There's got to be something else. So maybe you're right. Maybe it's someone out wide that's just a little bit better than what we have right now. So that's a very good point, Mike, to bring to the table here. All right, Mike, one more question. And this is from Roger Pink. You ready for this? Why oh why is Klein still... Why oh why is Klein still at Fulham? Players win game, not stats. Now, I'm just going to mention this before you give your answer. There's a coach in right down from where I am right now, coach of the New England Patriots, that has a line, even though I know he uses stats. He says stats are for losers. That's his catchphrase. So I just started laugh. I was laughing when I actually saw this post, Mike, by Roger. But again, I understand why people are bringing up Klein. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, we've discussed this before, and I think people are getting too hung up about it completely. You know, it's a tool. It's a tool we use. Rightly or wrongly, it's there. You know, if you believe the club, then it's this two-box system, and we're not going to allow one manager to fill a squad with his players like we did with Yol. And that's the lesson that's been learned. And that's a lesson a lot of clubs have taken into account, is that while a manager is the key man, he's the one who gets the players to play whatever system they want, they are not going to give full control to a manager to carte blanche, go out and buy who he wants. So you have Rick there, controlling the football side of things. You've got Alistair with the checkbook, and you have Klein, who is one tool, is a stats guy. Then you have the scouts as well. So he's there because, you know, let's be honest, because the owner's son is involved in that kind of business. Now, we don't know which players have been signed because they are Klein's players or they are Jokanovic's players.
Right.
From my understanding, a player like Hozabad is an absolute Jokanovic signing, yet he's nowhere near the squad. So who gets the blame for that?
Good point.
So do you then say, well, you know, if you gave Jokanovic, freedom to go out and sign who he wanted, would you suddenly have, a load of players from Spain who weren't up to the job at the moment? So, and I'm not saying Hozabad isn't up to the job. I'm just saying I'm using him as an example.
Right, it's a good example, though.
Yeah, and then but then we know that he really wanted Joe. Well, I've been told that he really wanted Johansson. He was absolutely key, and that's the player he wanted. And then we have Martin. So who picked Martin? You've got people saying he didn't want him, but now it's a Klein signing, because he's a striker and his figures are good. But then you have Jokanović in the paper as we started the program saying, I want to sign him. So it until someone can turn around to me and say, that player was signed because of Klein, that player was signed because of Jokanović, we're never going to know.
That's right.
And so he is, it's just a tool that we use. Could it be handled better by the club? Absolutely. And, I do have a little bit of insight into how it's working and some of the issues involved, which I'm not going to go into on the radio or in public.
Okay.
But just to say that it's there, and really until Khan sells the club at some time in the long distant future or even next month, I think he's going to be there fully. And almost every club uses some kind of system now, and fans just, I'm sorry, they just have to get used to it, and whether you like it or not. And but I really think the club could do themselves a whole lot of good by just blatantly coming out, discussing it, explaining how it works, and taking it from there, really. It would kill a lot of all the gossip, all the rumors, and would let everyone know where we stand. And I just mentioned there was a tweet today by White Noise, and anyone who follow
I
who's on
saw
Twitter
that.
will
I
realize that
retweeted it, by the way. I retweeted it.
So he's, for those who don't do Twitter, he's the font of anything that's Fulham. He will tweet, he will retweet, he will like, anything where Fulham are mentioned. He's a great source. But he asked the question, what would Shay Khan need to do for you to feel he was doing a good job? And I sort of replied, build a stand, give a new contract, support Jokanović. But then I did say, create an open and honest culture at a club unlike anywhere else. And I don't expect the club to do it. I don't expect any club to do it. But I would love a football club to be open its doors and explain exactly what's going on. And that's the problem I think we have at the moment. Yes, I meet the club once a month for the Fulham Supporters Trust, and we get a lot of information. We've persuaded them to do certain things with the ticketing for away games, which has been really helpful. But there's a lot more the club could do, and I'd like them to go down that kind of route, really.
It's very interesting, Mike, because I actually agree with pretty much everything that you're talking about here. And Craig Klein, the way I look at it, like you said, it's a tool. It's also checks and balances, making sure everyone's on the same page, everyone, talks about it. It isn't just one person making decisions. So it really is, just part of the process. And that's the way I look at it. And if it helps you pick the right players, why not use it? So that's the way I look at it. In regards to being a little bit more transparent, I'm there with you, Mike. They can be, they can just tell us in more general terms how things go. They don't have to give us any trade secrets. Maybe just open up just a little, just a little. And I think that would help a great deal. So I'm there with you on that. I just think that they should open up just a little bit. You don't have to tell us any deep dark secrets here, but just open up just a little bit. Yeah, just be a little bit more transparent. And I think that would go a long way, I think. So I'm there with you, my friend. All right. Let's now start our preview. And we're going to start by just hearing a little bit from the managers, what they had to say in front of this match coming up tomorrow. We're recording this Friday, so let's start with the head coach or manager. I'm not sure of his title with Reading, Jaap Stam. And this is actually, I got this from the Fulham website, but I believe it originated from the Reading website. These are quotes from Mr. Stam. I'll just read them to you, Mike, and get your thoughts on his mindset heading into this match with Fulham. So here's what he had to share. Quote, "Fulham have got a great team. I think it'll be one of the most difficult games to play so far this season. The way they want to play is quite similar to what we like to do. They like to play out from the back. They got quality attacking players who are comfortable on the ball as well. If you give them time, they can make it very difficult for you. So it's going to be a very interesting game on Saturday. I expect the opposition will be talking about us too, about what we've done up till now. They'll know how we want to play and will probably want to try and prevent us playing out as well. That is the tactical part of the game that makes it interesting. We've been watching the video clips of the opposition, thinking about shape and picking out what we can make the difference in the game. We're looking at what we can do both with and without possession. So we've been spending the week training to prepare for what is coming on Saturday. You need to be creative and inventive sometimes when you go into games. We know about the opposition and how they like to play. We need to be aware of what they can do. We're working on all kinds of different shapes and formations so we can be prepared for what the opposition do. We make sure we can carry out what we want to do because we believe focusing on our own game is very important. Very interesting quotes, Mike, from Jaap Stam. I'm curious what you took out of this.
Yeah, well, it's, I think the first line of it, you know, Fulham have got a great team. Now, I don't think it's a great team, but what you keep reading and hearing from fans when we've been to their grounds especially, even when we, batted Huddersfield, that kind of stuff, is everyone is saying what a good team we are, and how we're playing. And so you have, a lot of Fulham fans looking at where we are and, still being hypercritical. But, we are in a different place than we were a year ago. Maybe not miles ahead of, points-wise. And even today I've seen people trying to compare Jokanović with Simons again. I mean, it really is, for me, chalk and cheese. Look at the way we're playing. We're at our best. Yes, we still have flaws, and we spoke about that earlier on. But, he's right as well about how similar the two teams are. I mean, you look at some stats there, and, we average 56% possession. They average 58.
That's right.
Our pass success is 82.7. Theirs is 82. We have 14 shots a game. They have 13 shots.
That's right.
Pass types. We're first and second in short passing. Reading play a few, but then on the other side, Reading play the highest number of long balls per game.
They do
in the league. So so that's an interesting one. So not having seen one of their games sort of on TV or anything like that, I can only think that they keep the ball in their own area, or mix it about in the midfield in defence. And then they look to break on the counter, by the sounds of it, and look to get the ball forward very quickly. So it could be a very frustrating game for some of those fans who hate to see real passing football or possession football, because you've got two teams who could probably have a standoff with us kicking the ball around our 18-yard box, and when they get it, kicking around their 18-yard box. So it will be interesting to see how it comes out. I think maybe they will change their ways a little bit. They are the away team. But as I've said already, they're on a run of five wins, and that can't be sniffed at. And they're going to be a tough side. They are one of the teams on form, and it's going to be a really good test for us. But we're at home, and we've got to start winning at home on a regular basis. And we need to get results against the teams in this, the top six, top eight, because they're who we're competing with. And what better place than to do it at the Cottage tomorrow? But it will be tough.
It's going to be tough, Mike. And, it's funny because I have all these stats that I'm going to be sharing with you momentarily. You pretty much named most of them. And they're all even, except for, like you said, long balls, which is very interesting that they're so high up on long balls. But what I found interesting about the quotes is that he was talking about plans, formation, shape, changing things. I have a feeling that that this is a type of head coach that if things don't go his way, he's going to change things. So this is, to me, going to be a tactical match where I think managers are really going to be looking at this and could be changing things up if it becomes a stalemate, which it could, like you said. Two teams that like to play a certain way and could basically equal each out. So it's going to be interesting to watch how this all plays out. But I think he's one of these managers that's going to try to match wits with Jokanović. It's going to be interesting to see this chess match because I think things are going to change during the match when one team gets up. All right, Mike, now I'm going to share with you some quotes from Slavisa. This is directly from the Fulham Twitter account. I got them directly from the Twitter account. So I've already mentioned Dennis Odoi because that's how it all started. But here's some other quotes that, again, came directly from the official Fulham Twitter account. Quote, "We are disappointed after the last result, but we are confident heading into the next game tomorrow. Nobody has outplayed us in the games behind us, and we're confident in ourselves and heading into the next games. We conceded 2 goals from crosses, so we have been working on this. We've been pushing ourselves harder." Then he talks about the return of Scott Parker. Quote, "To have Scott back is very important. He is professional and makes our team better every day." All right, Mike, what do you take out from these quotes from Slavisa?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult without having the full interview, so you've only got the, the Twitter things. I mean,
yeah,
we conceded 2 goals, so they've been working on that. It was a little bit shades of, the team under Simons. So we need to certainly attack the ball more. And you would hope with Callis and Sigurdsson there, you know, they would be able to deal with these things. But anything that Jokanović does, you know, they look at every little detail that's going on both during the games, before games and after it. So I'm sure they've worked hard on a training field to cut down on defence. And like I say, this team plays the long ball a lot, you know.
Yep,
so it's going to be our danger. I always think we have a real problem with the ball coming straight at us from their centre-backs or goalkeeper and players running on. We seem to have an issue with people getting behind us sometimes. So hopefully that's something they've been working on. The other comment that gets me is where he mentions Scott Parker. So to have Scott Parker back is very important. He is professional and makes our team better every day. Does that mean we're going to see Parker start tomorrow? I know he's back in the squad and, you know, club captain, that type of thing. But I have a sneaky feeling we could be seeing the Parker-McDonald duo start tomorrow. There's something just nagging in the back of my mind there that we could see that reappearance.
Boy.
That's all you can really take from those things, you know, apart from Odoi, which, you know, some of us have missed. But yeah, they should be disappointed. You know, we have been playing well at times, but we should have won last week. But we need to get winning. You know, I've posted some stats today, and we're hanging on in there with our fingernails, just outside that top 6 points wise. But we can't allow other teams to get away. So we need a win to sort of close that gap.
No, I agree, Mike. The one thing I got out of it was him talking about no one's outplayed us. You know, I found that fascinating because, again, that just shows that he believes, you know, again, I'm reading between the lines, but he just feels that we could do better. And that's obvious. You look at Fulham and they really should be doing better. But it is a new team. And it's taken time for all the pieces to come together. I think that's a factor in all this. But I think that they could do better. I think that they should have more victories. Some of these draws should be victories, you know, and I think that's part of this. I'm trying to remember, Mike, has there been an opponent that's really outplayed them that you can remember? You've talked about the Aston Villa match, but they weren't outplayed in that match. They just didn't, you know, they didn't do enough in that match. But have they really been outplayed at all? I mean, do you agree with him on that?
Well, I mean, Bristol City pretty much worked us over, didn't they? But, you know, result-wise, but... No, I mean, the Villa game, they never outplayed us. We didn't do anything. But I wouldn't say they outplayed us. So he's right. At times, we have, you know, at certain times throughout games, we have dominated and shown how good we can be. And that is the frustrating thing. We are a good, I would say, good, you know, 6 points, 6 to 10 points somewhere short of where we should be. And I still stick by my view is that, you know, we have a team that's capable of fourth to eighth around that area. I've not seen anything from any team that makes me think, you know, apart from Newcastle, that anyone else is any better. Look at Brighton. You know, we battered them first half last week, but they had some kind of resilience. They have that 10%, which which we lost. Our level went down, their level went up, and they were better than us. And we need to find that magic remedy or whatever it is that can give us that edge in games where we turn a 1-0 lead into a 3-0 lead and close the game out completely. I mean, he has a settled squad. You look back over the teams over the lineup, so maybe since Barnsley, and we haven't used that many players when you look at it, and we haven't been outplayed. So that's the frustrating thing about this season. This championship is very hard. It's wide open. I mean, you look at the table, and we're 3 points off, 4 points off six, and probably the same off of the bottom three almost. Apart from Rotherham, everyone else can beat each other. And the other thing as well is that some of the teams who were fancied to be in the promotion areas started badly, but now you have Derby, Leeds, Villa. They're all doing well. So we need to get in that group. That's what I'm saying. We can't allow any more teams to get away.
No, I'm right there with you, Mike. And going on this theme, I want to read this to you, and then we're going to really get into this preview. We're already starting it, just talking about the head coaches here. But I saw this earlier in the week, an article about Kevin McDonald with some quotes from him. And I'm going to read this to you because this goes along with what we're talking about. These are quotes from Kevin McDonald that were taken after the Brighton match. This is what he had to say. Quote, you've done well when a couple of their boys come up to you and say as much. A few said to me, you're the best team we've played so far. You're absolutely dominated us. I don't know how we've won this game and stuff like that. All right, Mike, what are your thoughts about that? And I've seen other stuff like that from Brighton supporters. And I think we heard, I heard that in the Brentford match. I mean, this is going along with this. We must be underachieving here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes back to what Stan said, these other teams do rate us. They can see what we're doing, and but we are not fully firing for some reason. And it's Jukanovic who has to find the magic formula that will turn us into that team that can win four or five on the trot and be challenging. Because basically, we need to be one of the top four teams for the rest of the season.
Right.
To get into sixth place. That's the kind of form we have to show for the rest of the season. So the question I would ask listeners, do you think we are one of the top four teams in the division? And if so, we need to play like it. Otherwise, we've got no chance of the playoffs. So,
I agree with you, Mike.
My view at the moment is let's get to the 1st of January. Let's still be, if we can be in the top six the 1st of January, that will be great. But as long as we are no more than 3 or 4 points off the top six, if we can just stay in reach of that, then there is room for us to improve the squad and do a real good push for the second half of the season. But any more than that, I think it will be too hard to claw back. It doesn't sound a lot, but it is really when you look at it. So that's what I'm hoping for, over the next few games. And once we get this game out of the way, there are technically easier games coming up. So we should be doing okay. I did find, I'll just raise a stat that I just saw, Russ, actually. We were talking about
go ahead, Mike.
How Reading play. Yeah, yep. So I said Reading must play around with the ball in sort of their third of the pitch. So I went on to whoscored.com, and there they are, Reading, bottom or top, whatever way you want to look at it, of action zones for their own third. So, a third of the game is played in their own third. And so it sounds pretty much like I said, they keep the ball. It's in their 18 to 25 yard area, and then they launch it forward by the looks of it. So, so it's been an interesting one.
No, very good there, Mike. I'm glad that you found that stat, because trying to figure out exactly what's going on here, I think you nailed what they like to do. They like to control it in their own half, and then they launch it long. And that's what Fulham need to be on the lookout for. All right, Mike, real quick, I'm going to give more of these whoscored.com stats that you pretty much have already mentioned, but we'll go through this quickly. Possession, Fulham are second in the league with 56.7, but Reading are first, like you said, at 58.9. Aerials, both teams aren't good at aerials. Fulham are last in the league at 16.8, and Reading are 21st at 18.5 shots. Fulham are third at 14.4, but Reading aren't that far away at 10th with 13. Passing success, like you mentioned, Mike, Fulham are first at 82.7, but hey, they're second with 82 at 82. So again, very close on so many of these stats. Fulham are tied for second with crosses at 22. But again, Reading are tied for sixth with 21, just one behind. Here's a stat that I think could be helpful for Fulham. In this match, through balls, Fulham are still currently first with three. And right now, Reading don't have any, so they're tied for last in that category. Going back to long balls, like you mentioned, Mike, Fulham are currently 22nd with 70, but right now Reading are first at 94. That's a big difference. But to top that off, short passes, Fulham are first with 480. Reading are second with 425, which is very interesting. But maybe that goes with what you're talking about, Mike, keeping possession of the ball in their half and then launching it long. Maybe that's what that's all about. Now let's go to the table, because I find this interesting and definitely want your thoughts after I go through this and the characteristics. Reading, third in the league, 10 victories, 4 draws, 4 losses. They've scored 25. They've only given up 19. They're on a +6 goal differential, Mike, and are on 34 points. Fulham are 10th in the league, 6 victories, 7 draws, 5 losses. We've also scored 25. We've only given up 2 more goals than them at 21. We're on +4. Goal differential and are on 25 points. They're on +6 goal differential. We're on +4. Their characteristics, according to WhoScored.com, here are their strengths: shooting from direct free kicks, finishing scoring chances, attacking down the wings, protecting the lead. Weaknesses: avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, aerial duels. Very weak at stopping opponents from creating chances, and very weak at defending against through ball attacks. This might be an area for Fulham to take advantage of Reading. Reading style play, possession football, short passes, playing in their own half, like we've already talked about, consistent first 11, and they are aggressive. Okay, Mike, I've given you a lot of information there. What do you make of what I shared from WhoScored.com about this upcoming match with Reading?
Yeah, so, I mean, I did a little bit of this earlier on. I had a look at the stats, and they are so similar, and like we've mentioned, some numbers there. So I tried to figure out why are they in a better position than us, you know, what is the difference? And the only thing I can bring it down to is they have played, so out of the top 8 teams, when you take themselves away, they've only played 4. You know, so out of the 7 teams they could play, they've only played 4. The bottom 8, they've played all 8 of them. I think I've got that right, or maybe 7. So their results compared to the teams they've been playing are slightly different. So they've had a bit of an easier group of teams to play over this first, two-fifths of the season. So that's the only difference I can see, is that they, you know, they've got a couple of other results against the teams near the bottom of the league, which you need to do. And that for me is the difference that I'm seeing, because all our stats are virtually identical. And
yes, that's what's interesting about this,
you know. But so they beat Burton at home 3-0 the other week, so that's an example. You know, they beat Reading away 3-0, so compare that to the two Fulham results. So, you know, and there straight away is a difference between ourselves and them. So you know, we played Wigan and Burton consecutively. We drew 1-1 with Burton, 0-0 with Wigan, and then, you know, got 2 points out of it. They've gone and played those two teams, and they've got 6. So straight away, there's a 4-point advantage to Reading. So that's the fine lines that are between, you know, us being where we are in 10th and them up in 3rd. So, you know, you've only got to look at the table. Give us another 4 points, and where would we be, Russ? We'd be in the playoffs, wouldn't we? So
it's a good point.
But that's what it is. That's the difference. You know, they're you've got to win against the teams at the bottom and get a good fair, you know, number of results against the rest of the league. But you've got to be beating those six, seven teams near the bottom and beating them well, especially for goal difference as well. But that's the only difference I can see, is that they're finishing the teams off at the bottom better than we have.
That's a good point. And listen, we have our opportunities coming up. We're going to be playing Rotherham. Ipswich Town's coming up. Not that they're right near the bottom, but again, you're talking about a team that you're going on the road. It's difficult, but someone that you should be able to get a result against, or you really want to get you should want to get a result, because they're a team that is beatable there, even there. And then, of course, you have Wolves coming up. Wolves have struggled, but now they have Paul Lambert. We'll see how that works out. But there are matches coming up that there are points there for you. And this one's a difficult one, but upcoming, there are some other matches that hopefully you can get points from. All right, Mike, let's really get into this. Who are your key players for Fulham tomorrow?
Well, Martin's going to be key, of course. You know, he's that central cog where everything plays off of us. And Kearney as well. Kearney needs to... I've been saying it a couple of times when I've done the show recently. I just feel Kearney needs to step up. He needs to grab hold of a game and show his worth. I mean, he has done it a couple of times, but is he doing it consistently enough? I'm not convinced. So for me, it's Martin. It's the attacking part. It's Martin and Kearney, because I think it's going to be a game of few chances, so it's going to who's going to take their chance. And I think I can see Martin getting a goal tomorrow, and I think it's going to be a 1-0, hopefully to us, but 1-0 either way, really.
Okay, I'm going to throw out another name of a player that might play a significant role here. I was going on Tyler Hurst and website. You can go to tylehurstand.sbnation.com. They have some very interesting articles. They were going through matchups, and one of the matchups they have is Dennis Odoi versus Roy Behrens. And then I was also listening to this podcast as well, Tyler Hurst and podcast, and they were talking about this player, Behrens, who's a very attack-minded player. But I'm paraphrasing a little bit. It sounds like he could be a liability defensively. So this could be an opportunity for Ryan Fredericks, a player that he might be able to take advantage of. So, again, I just want to throw out the name of Ryan Fredericks, because we don't have Dennis Odoi. They had the matchup being Dennis Odoi with Roy Behrens. So I'm going to say maybe Mike Ryan, this could be a Ryan Fredericks type of match.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like I say, we've got to take the game to them, and Fredericks, with his pace, hopefully we'll be able to get past their left back and get in that box. I very much want Fredericks to really. I don't. He's not a great crosser of the ball, but he's certainly someone who I think should run more directly at players into the box. You're looking at penalties, that kind of thing, drawing the foul, and that should be the tactic with him, consistently. And then, if he goes forward, then somebody like Johansson's got to, or McDonald's got to be looking to, go over and fill in that right back position until he makes his way back. Because we all know, he does struggle with fitness wise, certainly after about an hour. But, if that's the best route we've got, then, we have to use that. I mean, personally, I would like to see Session on play tomorrow.
Okay.
As well, Malone's done really well, but I'd like to see, I think it's time to give Session on a game. I think at home he gets more support from the fans as well, because everyone likes him and wants him to do well, and so I would like to see that change as well, and give it a two-pronged, full-back attack, really.
Okay, very good, Mike. Mike, I you just reminded me of something that I wanted to talk about during the show, because, again, listening to this really interesting podcast, and I know I've said it a few times, but definitely check this podcast out if you want to learn what fans of the opposition are saying. Very interesting. One of the things that they shared, Mike, they believe, again, they didn't have the exact stats, but they believe that this season so far, Reading have drawn 9 penalties. That's a good amount of penalties, Mike. And when I thought about that, I was like, oh, this might be another Norwich City match. So keep that in mind, Mike, when you're there. This team might be the type of team that could try to draw penalties. I'm not saying that they're doing it on purpose. You know what I mean? That this could be a team that could actually have that ability. So be on the lookout for that. So I just wanted to mention that to you, Mike, because I just remember that same type of feeling going into the Norwich City match when I was watching the video of them and seeing how they were able to draw a penalty. So just keep an eye out for that. All right, my friend, let's now move on. And just your opinion, what did Fulham need to do to win this match? What would be your approach if you were Slavisa? How would you attack this team?
Yeah, so like I say, I think they play the ball quite, you know, they play with it quite deep. They pass it around. So we're going to get frustrated. But there's two things. Our defensive line shouldn't be so high, but I think, you know, we've got to be careful with the long ball and over the top, because, you know, that is a weakness for us. But I would like us to be looking to take the players on, you know, go straight. And when a team plays four, you know, two banks of four or five and a three, or pack that defensive area, we get a bit frustrated. The ball goes from left to right, and we're always looking to, you know, just find that pinpoint pass in between players. And I think we need to be a bit more aggressive in actually attacking players, going at them. And so that's what I would be looking for us to do. Hence why I said, you know, with Fredericks, and if we played Session on, I know Malone can do it as well, but, you know, I think Session on is probably the better player to take players on, and look to get the ball wide and do that. Go, you know, attack the sides of the 18-yard box. That's what I would be looking to do.
Okay, very good, Mike. Right back to you. Starting 11, what would you do here if you were Slavisa? You know, you're the manager. What would be your starting 11? And then you can share what you think he's going to do.
Well, I'll start with what I think he's going to do. I think he's going to keep pretty much the same team, except that obviously Fredericks will come in. I do think, and God, I wish I didn't have to say this, but I do think Parker might start tomorrow. And I think he will come in for probably Aiti, and so you will see Kearney maybe stunted out on the right, and Aluko will go over on the left. It's just, I've just got this feeling that it's going to be a Parker McDonald. I hope I'm wrong. I might be totally wrong, and, you know, everyone can have a go. You got that wrong, Mike. Well, I hope I am on this one, but, you know, I do think that's what's going to happen. Otherwise, my team, Fredericks would come in. I'll keep the centre backs the same. I would bring in Session on. I would have the same midfield three, McDonald, Kearney and Johansson. I'd have Martin up top and Aluko. And I'd give Cabano a start. I know he did quite well last week. Yeah, he came back into the squad last week, got a little run out. But, you know, we have to see what he needs to produce something. It's even too much to say he flatters to deceive, because really, when he's been on the pitch, he's not done anything.
Right.
So it's time to give him a game, I think, and tell him, you kind of should be telling him to go out there and show what you can offer to the team, because otherwise he's taken up a space which someone else could really use. So, okay. Yeah, I would go with Cabano.
Okay, very interesting. Very interesting take there, Mike, on what you were doing, what you think Savisa is going to do. I'm going to throw in a player that I'm curious your thoughts on, a player that played with Reading last year, Lucas Piazon. And when I was listening to this podcast, they were talking about that at times. You know, it sounded like to me they were frustrated by him, because at times, you know, he's a good player, but he went hiding sometimes. Would you play him in this match at some point, because he's going against a team he played with last season?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I mean, he's done fairly well for us. You know, he's been involved in a couple of goals, and, you know, his work rate is second to none. I think with him and Johansson in the team, you've definitely got legs. But in the end, he has to, you know, produce assists and score goals, and that's probably why he's found himself on the bench, and he had a couple of quiet games. So I wouldn't say he went missing, but, you know, he maybe could have done better. So he'll be on the bench tomorrow, and he'll probably come on at some stage. But yeah, I wouldn't have any worries about him actually playing against Reading. The other thing to remember, of course, is that the manager from Reading last year is gone, so it's someone completely different. And
Sure.
although he might know some of the players, I don't think it makes any difference at all.
Okay. Very interesting there, Mike. All right. Let's now go to predictions. We'll start with the Cottage Talk Twitter poll that I did. I had 99 votes. Win was at 59%, draw was at 28%, and loss was at 13%. Now we'll go to the predictions from the foam supporters. I did this late, so I don't have that many predictions, but let's start with Mia Cutler on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. She's predicting 4-1 to foam. Andrew Iliff, one of our co-hosts, is 3-1. I feel our reactions from the Brighton loss will be positive. Gary Cooper says, I think 2-1 to Reading. I think the pressure will be too much at home to get a positive after Brighton and will be a tale of two halves. Hope I'm wrong. Combe Bugler has his high score and draw 2-2 or 3-3. Man, I went to a 3-3 draw at Reading, so that wouldn't shock me. Gerald Graves has 2-1 to Fulham. All right, Mike, over to you. Your prediction for this match.
So I think it will be close. I think it will be one goal, and that's it. I'm hoping we're going to win 1-0, and I'd say it's going to be a Martin goal. But it's going to be a very cagey, and for a lot of fans, I think a very slow game. So, God, I'm dreading.
Especially if he plays Parker, Mike. If he plays Parker McDonald.
Well, yeah. It's almost like it could be a staring competition, you know, between two teams who keep the ball a lot. Yeah, I do think it's only going to be one goal. And I think we can win it. And, because they've won 5 on the trot, yes, but to win 6, it's a tough ask. And, they're going to come unstuck at some stage, and hopefully it's going to be tomorrow.
Now, what's interesting, and I was not aware of that, when they came to Craven Cottage last year, again, this is just fans feeling this way, listening to this podcast. You know, they came here and they were obviously on a high. They were third. They were third back then, Mike, last season. They're third again. So they have bad memories of, based on what I was listening to, of Craven Cottage. So it's an interesting spot for Reading. I could make an argument for them winning this match because it's a quality team. They've had a very good season. But I'm sorry, I'm going with a Fulham victory. I think that we have enough to beat this team. I think it's going to be hard because, like you said, I think it's going to be very cagey. Teams taking their turn of having possession, and it could be, like you said, it could be just matching wits here, and it could just be equaling each out of here. So that it could be difficult, but I see us scoring. I see us scoring a couple of goals. I'm going to say 2-1 because I'm not a big fan of their goalkeeper, Mike. I think we could beat Ali Al-Habsi a couple times. So I'm going to say 2-1 to Fulham. So that's my prediction.
Okay.
And, and I know it drives David Hulley crazy, but I'm going to say 2 goals from Chris Martin. I know it drives him crazy when I do that, but that's what I'm going to do because I did that with Ross McCormack all last year. All right. And we know how that – well, he scored a lot of goals, but he didn't like when I predicted Ross McCormack to score all those goals. All right, Mike, great show. Great show. Thank you so much for joining me, my friend. And I definitely want to wrap this up. I can't thank you enough for doing this with me. Final thoughts before we go.
Just to say that I think it will be a tough game tomorrow. There's absolutely no doubts about it. But we saw what Brighton offered, and they did us last week in the second half. So that's the level we need to be at to be in that top six. And I still believe we can be there, but we need to start winning against those teams. And tomorrow against Reading, I believe it's going to happen. So, 1-0 to Fulham, and onwards and upwards, hopefully.
Okay, very good there, my friend. And again, can't thank you enough. This was an excellent episode, and I've enjoyed doing it. Like I mentioned before, when we started the show, I obviously enjoyed meeting you for the second time. We met last year, but it was really nice spending Thanksgiving with you. So I'll leave you with that. My final thoughts just involve the upcoming matches, because there's an opportunity here, like Mike said. If we are somewhere 3 to 4 points by the beginning of January, I think we're in good shape. If we're that close to the top six, if we're in the top six, even better. But there are some winnable matches coming up. Wolves is a winnable match. I'll even throw Derby County in there. They've rebounded lately, but still, I think it's a winnable match. All the matches coming up, they can win. So let's see how many wins that they can get, because I certainly don't want to see so many draws. I'll take the points, but definitely these matches are winnable. Every single one of them are winnable. And of course, I've already mentioned Rotherham United. You need to be winning that match. All right. So that's my final thoughts, but it is time to go. For Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you as always for listening to Cottage Talk.